people who love them.
Hey, this is The Thing About Cars. Thanks once again for listening to us and tuning us in on your favorite podcast machine of choice. Today we're at the table with
Ben.
Becca, different Becca than you've heard before.
Yes, a different Becca for sure. Becca, since this is the first time behind the mic, you want to tell us about yourself a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I'm a makeup artist. I use all natural products. And a little more than a year ago, I had an accident with my old Hyundai, which I've since learned was a terrible choice of car. No offense to any Hyundai owners out there. So since then, I got a Honda Civic a bit more than a year ago, an older one, because while I really wanted a Tesla, it is definitively not in my budget, nor was an older Nissan Leaf. So I went with a car that gives a really small green footprint, a really small carbon footprint. So I'm able to do all the work by myself on this car, which is something, if you had told me 5-10 years ago I would be working on my own car, I would not have believed you. I would have slapped you with a shoe, probably. So here I am working on my own car and learning a lot about cars. And
cool.
Yeah.
So this makes me want to ask you a couple things. You talked about an accident and being in a Hyundai, and I just saw a really bad accident involving a Hyundai.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that car survived what I think would otherwise have been a totally lethal crash. So maybe
wow.
Hyundai has come a long way.
Maybe, yeah.
Because I looked at that, and there was that one of those rear tires is where the back seat used to be, and everybody walked away from that car.
Wow.
Well, circumstances of the individual incident.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Mine was slow moving in traffic, and
Say my brother was once in a 77 Civic. He had a low speed head on with a 90 or 91 Cherokee. Both cars were totaled.
Wow.
The Cherokee was messed up pretty bad.
Yeah.
in my little rear end or fender bender thing, my front bumper went right up into my radiator, and I was like, you know what? I had already done enough repairs and learned enough that I had probably messed up the car in the past, and it was time to give it up. So
you want to tell us about the car and what you're working on? How do you learn?
The Civic. Well, so as a makeup artist, I've seen all the kids learn how to do terrible makeup on YouTube. But as far as cars go, I have learned a ton on how to work on different bits and pieces on my car through YouTube. With the Hyundai that I used to have, my boyfriend and a really close friend of mine who is has been a mechanic for years, he's actually also a mutual friend of the other Becca, but they would both work on my car, and once in a while they'd pull out YouTube, and I thought, well, gosh, I can probably do that. I've got a couple of tools here and there, and so I've accumulated enough tools that I can do a lot of jobs by myself. And if it's a two-person job, part of its strength, I need to get stronger. But YouTube has really shown me a lot, and then also just looking at car forums, Honda forums in my case, and seeing what people are saying about this or that issue that I might be researching at the moment.
And so it's really just a matter of grabbing some tools and getting in there.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So getting the parts and just getting my hands dirty.
What's the hardest thing you've had to do so far?
The water pump and timing belt, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So far. I had help with my boyfriend for that because there's a particular bolt behind my wheel well that is impossible to get off. We had to use not only a breaker bar, but like some ridiculous contraption to get the thing off. And I have to go in again, actually. We apparently didn't tighten the AC belt quite enough, but I can do that through the wheel well. I've already seen a YouTube on how to do that and not have to dismantle everything. So
I mean, I'm a big dude, right? And I still like having company when I work on cars. And maybe it's just a factor of me being a huge extrovert, but I think it doesn't matter what job it is. It's always more fun when you have company.
Uh-huh.
Again, maybe that's just extroversion speaking, but I think it's cool that you got in there and just started doing it. I wish more people would actually do that. What advice would you give to someone who is a little hesitant to maybe start working on their own car?
I would say don't hesitate to ask a local mechanic, even if it's just driving up there and asking them for a quick advice, tell them to take a look. There's a place that does only Hondas and Acuras really close to me in Decatur, and I've popped in and just popped open the hood, told him, you know, I think I can work on this myself. I'm pretty sure I have a good clue what I'm doing, but can you just kind of verify it for me? And they're more than happy to, like, poke their heads in there, you know?
Cool.
And, yeah, definitely don't be afraid to ask for advice or help.
I'll back that up. Many years ago, I had an early 90s Acura that I was doing the same job on, and the crank pulling nut was stuck way too tight.
Oh, yeah, that's you know, that horrible nut.
I was, right, you know, I was using a chain, excuse me, a chain wrench on the pulley and a big breaker bar on the nut. You know, I went out and paid, I don't know, big bucks for this giant 30-some millimeter socket, and I still, you know, I'm holding, you know, one with both arms and pushing on the other one with both feet, would not come off. Go up to a shop, explain it to the guy, said, yeah, I'm a do-it-yourselfer, but, you know, can you loosen that up? Can you put your air wrench on that? Then just put it on enough for me to get 3 miles home without it falling off. He's like, yeah, man, no sweat. Took him a second. He didn't even charge me.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
Very cool.
Because that thing is really difficult.
yeah. There's a lot of torque on those, and it's on a moving part. So,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's cool. I get chickens. I admit it. There are things that I like to do, and then there's, you know, because it's usually just me at home, I usually get to a point where I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to pay a professional to do that. But, you know, smaller things, yeah.
Well, if you like a crowd to work on things, I'll give you a call when it's time to pull the body off the Lotus, because I'm going to need a crew to do that.
Okay. Cool. When is that going to happen?
Oh, I don't know. Probably in a couple of years.
And at some point, when I'm rich, I'd love to do an engine swap, but it's not in the budget right now. Yeah. My car doesn't have enough torque for me. I feel like I'm always having to.
You don't necessarily have to be rich.
Well, what's the new engine cost?
I figured I'd price it out around $2,000, $15,000 to $2,000.
That's not bad.
What I figured the whole job might cost me. Well, I don't have a cherry picker.
I was going to say, since it is a Civic.
Yeah.
Find a...
A good Acura.
Yeah, find a wrecked Integra with the VTEC engine.
Yeah.
It'll drop right in.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure which specific engine, but I knew I was going to look for an Acura to put in there.
I used to swim pretty hard in the pool of Hondas, but not just any Acura engine, not an Integra engine. There's a specific one that really cranks out some serious torque in horses, and that's what you should get.
Because the one I've got, the 2000 Civic, going up a little hill, my car's like, what? I don't know about this.
The Integra was basically just a fancied-up Civic, so the weight is going to be the same, so power-to-weight ratio won't be too different.
Size is the same.
Whether or not you have a direct bell housing fit, I don't know, but if it's within the same range of years, you know, you can swap the whole transmission and everything in there.
Yeah, as little modifications I would need to do, ideally.
Did we talk about the Mazda grounding issues last time?
I don't think so.
Okay, so the Mazda starts to sputter. I drive a 2005 Mazda 6, and it's got currently over 250,000 miles on it, so it's an old car. It's starting to sputter a little more noticeably, especially when the AC is on.
Mm.
And so in the Mazda forums, they say, obviously, initially, change your plugs, maybe change your coil packs. But then a few folks say, take off all the grounding wires, scrape off the paint, because apparently Mazda attached grounding points to paint and not to metal, and reattach them. And furthermore, ground the throttle body, which isn't currently grounded, and the block, which isn't currently grounded. They say that you'll pick up some horses and your sputter will go away. So I'm like, did Mazda actually push an entire line of car that's inadequately grounded? Am I likely to pick up more horses if I do these things? Should I just ignore that and just change the plugs and the coils?
Well, I doubt you'll pick up much extra power, honestly. But other than that, I would go ahead and do it. It certainly wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's much work.
Yeah, a proper ground is a very good thing to have.
I'll do the grounding bits. The plug part is also kind of easy. The front three plugs are totally easily accessible. Back three, you have to take the intake off, which means removing the throttle body. And it's like a 4-hour job. So I'm tempted to get in there and do it, but it's a lot of stuff to keep track of. So.
The last Golf I had, all four plugs were right on the front of the engine, right where you can see them, between the intake runners that you still have to remove, because even though you can see them, you can't really reach them.
Yes. Exactly.
My goodness, I didn't have to do them.
Well, if I have to get in there and change out the back three, and in fact, I should do the back three because I think it's overdue. But
definitely do them all. You know, if you're going to do any, do them all.
It's the throttle body that's going to be a problem. It's all that stuff that's attached to it right there on the edge of that engine. it's a Ford engine. Mm-hmm. And the way they seem to cram it in there, and they say, oh, we forgot to add this, and so they stuck it on the side where it was. And that's how the whole thing is put together. But I'll do that pretty soon.
It can't be any worse than the distributor on my dad's old Alfa Romeos.
I can imagine.
So to learn a little bit more about other cars than just my own, I've offered to help a friend do a tune-up on his 2013 Chrysler 200. So I told him once he gets the parts together, let me know.
Cool.
So I'll get into a totally different kind of engine, which is interesting.
Yeah,
so,
fun.
You say, the YouTube has at least a couple of videos on how to tune up my specific car, and even those guys say, here comes the pain in the ass, right? Related to removal of the throttle body and the gas and business. So, well, we have a new user question, or at least a rant. I'm not sure if there's a question in there. She wrote quite a bit. Shall I read it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
This is our friend Nancy. Nancy says, my 2013 Mercedes 550 SL key fob eats batteries almost weekly. She says, the guy at Batteries Plus told me it's because the fob is constantly communicating with the car, and I should store it as far away from the possible in a metal can. It didn't work. She says, that did not work. Dealership told me I should only use Panasonic batteries, which they sell at the dealership. How convenient. I've had better luck. But what's the deal, guys? So I think Ben poked around and found out a few things.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you find out? Do you remember?
Well, let's see. The constant communication is true, but that's not really legit here because, my Mazda's key fob works the same way. You know, it'll if the car is on and the fob gets more than about 5 feet from the sensor, you know, the car will give you a little warning. So that's not really it. But there are some other possibilities. One is if one of the buttons in the fob is worn a particular way that the contacts keep shorting. Or if you keep it in your pocket and it's pressed up against your leg or something, that may actually be pressing the buttons. But in the case of this car, there's one big potential stinker, and that is the Mercedes-Benz Keyless Go system, which from what I found in my research has caused a lot of people problems with key battery life.
So she says, yes.
Some kind of a design flaw.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
She says, yes, I've had some trouble with Keyless Go as well, but I attributed this to the key fob, not to the fob causing the problem. Thanks for the info, guys.
And that may be under warranty, too,
right?
Depending on how long the warranty on the car is.
Right. So Nancy then wrote back this morning, I think it was this morning, and she said, so I went out to crank the Mercedes today, slightly slow to turn over, but not a big deal. Went to put it in gear, nothing. Turned it off, re-crank, nothing. Turned it off, re-cranked again, nothing. Again, the fourth time, it would shift. I'm not sure what she means by this. She says, it's not the first time I've had this issue. Taking it back to the shop tomorrow. It's only 4 years old with 30,000 miles, !!! To which I simply said, what did they say the last time you took it to a dealership?
Yeah.
And here comes the rant. She goes on and on. She says, thanks for asking. I've had so many glitchy things with this car, I had to check service records. Now I can remind the service tech when he calls me today. She says, it was last June we had the same issue. We scanned the codes, had low voltage code and transmission control unit. They inspected the connector and found the connector was not secured correctly, removed and inspected some pins, found no damage, reinstalled the connector and made sure it was secure, tested and charged the battery, restarted and the battery tested well, cleared codes, and a complimentary car wash, she says. Then, on February of this year, the turn signals weren't working, so she took it in again. So in addition to installing a new steering column control module, to correct that issue, she found that, quote, the valve body was bad, replaced the valve body, filled transmission, and replaced filter, end quote. She adds, the vehicle may take many test drives to fully adapt transmission to shift points. What the hell?
Sounds like she needs a different car.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that last issue, they're all with a lot of cars today. They do have systems that learn a little bit. If anything gets reprogrammed or flashed, they may take 50 to 100 miles to read data from how they're driven to then adapt to the driver's habits. But other than that, yeah.
Right. But it's not the first time I've heard of Mercedes being very, very glitchy from strictly an electronics point of view. So,
well, look at how many really, really high-end ones are for sale used for really cheap.
Really cheap.
Yeah, I think a lot of people buy them and then they discover what they cost to keep and maintain.
Right.
You know, especially the really high end, like the V12 models and such. You can pick those up for almost nothing. And there have been a lot of interesting articles written about, you know, that, you know, BMWs too, and some of the other high end cars. A lot of articles have been written, you know, if you're a hobbyist and you know you're going to be tinkering, are these really cheap high end cars kind of a good deal? You know you're going to get reamed on parts, but you might have a lot of fun.
Sure. And that's the thing. It's like, how much money do you want to put into the ongoing maintenance of something that is just poorly designed?
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going to have anything constructive to tell Nancy about the whole ordeal.
I don't know. I hope she's looked into lemon laws, too.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
If that's the most constructive thing we can tell her.
I don't know what Georgia's lemon laws are, assuming she's here in Georgia, but I really don't know.
Well, it's ongoing. You know, the summary that I can... if I can try to make one here, is that it's an ongoing set of electrical problems for a car that's still under warranty. So, sorry, Nancy. Right. Let's move on then. What else do we want to talk about today?
I saw something the other day while I was driving around, and this is a thing I've heard about in the South, but I don't see it that often. But I was reminded the other day, I was on the way to my office in the morning, and I'm going through a residential area, and the guy in front of me starts to slow way down. Then he turns on his right turn signal. Then he turns off his right turn signal and speeds up. The vehicle in front of him actually turned right. Now, I've heard of Southerners doing this. They think they're doing you some kind of favor by warning you what the guy in front of them is doing.
That just sounds really confusing. I'm a Northerner.
It does, and I grew up in the South, but I'm from Northern stock. And but the thing that strikes me about it is, okay, is this some sort of guilt deflection? Does the guy in the middle car not want to be cursed at for slowing down? And if that's the case, what does it say about our driving culture that we need to do this kind of guilt deflection?
I grew up in this city. I grew up in Atlanta. I learned how to drive here. I've never heard of this convention. I've never heard of that at all.
Okay.
Me neither. Well, you know what? No, I think I've heard one other person mention it.
Really?
At some point, but I couldn't tell you who.
You know, I think it's just one of those weird things that people started to adopt, like turning on your blinkers when it's raining, your hazard lights when it's
heavy thunderstorms,
which is definitively the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
It would be the right thing to do if you were going really, really slowly, but if somebody's going the same speed everybody else, the same 70 to 80 as everybody else with their hazards on, that
turn the hazards off.
A little asinine.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of the whole... I'm going to warn the guy behind me about the guy in front of me thing.
Yeah, Southerners have a way of overthinking things, I've noticed sometimes, and that might be part of that. And I saw something weirder than that one time on one of our interstates late at night on 985 out in the country up there where I live. I was behind a guy in the left lane. Road was fairly open. I flash my lights, nothing. Flash them again, nothing. And I'm not being a real bug about it. I'm just giving him a little space, then flashing again. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy in probably a 10 to 12-year-old Cadillac. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But eventually he turns on his right turn signal, doesn't move to the right, then turns his left turn signal on, then turns the signal off. I think he was trying to instruct me to pass him on the right.
Huh.
Really?
Wow. Interesting.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Bizarre.
Speaking of weird lights, I think I mentioned in our messages. So what's with people in the South driving with their brights on all the time? Even in the city, when you've got plenty of street lamps, but also in the country. So I don't know if this is a norm down here or it just got missed, but up north it seems to be a norm. I grew up in the country, and on country roads, you know, you're driving along with your brights on, and then once you see another car coming towards you, you know, these are only two-lane highways, one each direction, you turn your brights off, and they turn their brights off until you pass each other, so you're not blinding each other. And down here, that never happens, and I feel like I'm going blind trying to avoid looking at that, but still watch the road. And what's your guys' take?
Well, my theory is, at least out in the country where you can tell about what your lights are doing, is that cars give us a lot more information than they used to. All these different dashboard lights and infotainment systems and things. So that little blue light that says your high beams are on, a lot of people, I think, are missing.
People just get that lost. Okay.
Either that, or because cars are so much more complicated now, that one control gets lost in the shuffle of hundreds of controls.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not. Now, in the city, it's probably more likely because the city roads are so well lit that they're not aware of it, which is probably also the reason, I think, why a lot of city dwellers drive around with no lights at night.
Yeah, I'll see that once in a while.
Although you'd think that the lack of illumination in their dashboard would clue them in.
Well, but if their daylights are on, then they have, yeah, if their parking lights are on, then they have dash lights.
Could be, but most of the ones I see just have nothing on.
Yeah, I've seen that too. It's, wow.
Somebody told me it's because they're drug dealers and it's part of their code. I think that's a lot of hooey.
Yeah, I think it's just clueless people.
I'd like to think it's just clueless people, otherwise.
I would hope so.
Even then, it doesn't really make me feel good. I'm turning into a total curmudgeon these days, but.
Isn't it fun?
Turn off your freaking
Get lights. Off my lawn!
That's right. Yeah. Drive!
Well, just to kind of a side note on the clueless people, there was something I was reading today, I think, about, oh yes, it was actually in a motorcycle magazine, but it was about cars, about how it was the guy who writes the safety column, and he was saying that he, in his opinion, driver skill is down across the board right now.
Hmm.
Then the next thing he wrote was technology, question mark.
Well, and are kids taking driver's ed classes at all? I don't know. I was the only
kid
in my
parent,
family
no
to take driver's ed. I guess none of my younger siblings took it. So,
I took it, but
so did I. Yeah,
but we walked through the book that the state of Georgia gave us at the time, and we walked through everything. And of course, by that time, I'd also helped my dad do some stuff to his car once I was a kid. So.
Oh yeah, well, I've been wrenching with my dad my whole life. But when I grew up in a smaller town in Alabama. We had a driver ed class in school, and the local Oldsmobile dealer provided the cars for that.
Hmm.
We had I took this class in 1984, so yeah, I'm officially an old fart, I guess. And we had brand new 1984 Oldsmobiles with a big, about 1.5 by 2.5 foot magnet on the door that had the dealer's name, and other than that, they
were taking mine in what, 98 or 99,
something like that. And there was that pedal bolted to the floor on the passenger side, which my teacher would fondly stroke with his socked foot when I drove.
That's way more than I needed to know.
Hey, it was him, not me, but. But yeah, my teacher's car was a brand new 84 Cutlass Supreme loaded. It was metallic burgundy with a burgundy velour interior and half vinyl top. And yeah, it was a real cream puff. And
Well, so I guess that is a question. Maybe we should put that on our Facebook page. How did you say it? Is driver skill
down?
Yeah.
And if so, why?
Right.
Yeah, and are people cognizant of if they are bad drivers? I see people on the road all the time who, the way it occurs to me is they must be afraid of the road. They're tootling along, and they go so slow to take a turn, and sometimes it's old people, sometimes it's young people. But it's almost like they're just afraid of being on the road. We need to better public transit so they don't need to drive if they're afraid of it.
Absolutely.
But...
So, on that note, please visit our Facebook page. We are at facebook.com/thingaboutcars, I believe. Anyway, if you search for the thing about cars,
it is what we're called.
Exactly. Otherwise, if you visit our actual webpage at thethingaboutcars.com, it will point you to all the relevant places. And we would love to hear from you via any of those venues. In the meantime, as always, we are The Thing About Cars, recording here at Strongbox West. Check them out at strongboxwest.com, and we will see you soon. Take care.